completely original words and music, and they're all songs I've written in the last 10 years, and that's widely available and on my website.
Susan McCown, thank you for joining us today on Madness Radio.
Thanks for having me.
That was Madness Radio. This is KBOO Portland. And I get to remind you that KBOO programming is made possible by KBOO member listeners and support from Darkside Cinema, open every night and featuring independent, foreign, and art house films. The Darkside is located at 215 Southwest 4th Street between Madison and Jefferson Avenues in Corvallis, Oregon. More information and showtimes available online at darksidecinema.com. And with that, it's time for Film at 11, because it's 10:30. Stay tuned.
Okay, yes, it's Film at 11, as usual at 10:30. This is DK Home. I'm here joined together with Rick Mitchell, friend of the show, who's here to talk about Once We're Brothers, a new documentary about the band, and Mark Mohan, who does, among other things, writes for Oregon Arts Watch.
Good morning.
To be clear, we're not exactly joined together. I've joined you here, and we're here together, but that we're not joined together, strictly speaking.
Not yet.
Good distinction.
Right.
Okay.
Okay.
So first we're going to be discussing Once We're Brothers, but before that, just a reminder that, as always here at Film at 11, we include on the episode's webpage the details about films that are opening in Portland and being revived over the next week. Just want to point out one curiosity, though. I love coincidence of titles. So today, two movies open. One is called Onward, and the other one is called The Way Back. So find that just amusing in a quaint way.
Onward is the new Pixar movie.
Yes.
And The Way Back is the new Ben Affleck movie.
Yes.
Apropos of nothing.
Which is also the title of the new Woody Allen memoir. So,
yes,
Once We're Brothers.
Mm-hmm.
This is a documentary about the band, and it's playing at the Kiggins right now and other local theaters. So, why should we take the band seriously?
Well, the movie actually had its, I think, Portland premiere last month at the Real Music Festival.
Oh, that's right.
Sponsored by the Northwest Film Center. At the art museum, but there were no advances available at that time. So even though we came in and did a show on that, we couldn't we couldn't talk about it at the time because we had no way to see it. I've since seen it, and it's showing also at Cinema 21.
Right.
I think it's in its second week there. Why should we care about the band? First, I mean, they are one of the greatest rock bands in music history. They had a relatively short peak period from about 1969 up until maybe 1974 with a last great concert, The Last Waltz, which was filmed as a documentary by Martin Scorsese, who, by the way, is the executive, one of the executive producers of Once We're Brothers. So, I mean, I think we should care about the band both for the quality of the music itself, but also for the type of music that basically they invented, which is what we now call Americana, a mixing of American roots music rooted in rock and roll, but with strong influences of country and blues and rhythm and blues. And the fact that they had three great singers
all at once.
Yeah, and a great songwriter and a great guitar player and a great organ player and a great drummer. I mean, that's why.
And also we learned in this documentary just how they honed their skills, because they played backup there was his rhythm section for Ronnie Hawkins.
Ronnie Hawkins. So he was a rockabilly guy.
Right.
He may have been sort of past his hit-making prime to the extent he had one by the time they became his backing band. But they toured all over the South with him in the early 1960s. They or at least Robbie Robertson, was still in his teens at that time. And that is, I think, partly where he developed his unique guitar style.
Let's talk about that for a second, because there's one moment in the film in which some Toronto musicians are talking about the influence on them of Robbie Robertson and his guitar technique. But the film, at least to my mind, doesn't really explain what that is, or define it, or describe it, or illustrate it.
And I don't know that we know how Robbie Robertson sounded in 1963 when he was in Toronto. We can speculate that what he was coming, he was evolving out of rockabilly into his own unique style, influenced by what was going on in the mid 60s. But the earliest that I've heard him, he may be on some Ronnie Hawkins records. He probably is.
Yeah.
But the earliest that I've heard him is on the Bob Dylan tour, the European tour, where they were booed for playing loud electric rock and roll. And by that time, I would say that he was a fully developed, great rock and roll guitar player. Remember, back in the late 1950s and early 1960s, there were very sophisticated jazz guitarists, Wes Montgomery, Kenny Burrell, and there were great blues guitarists all coming out of T-Bone Walker, B.B. King, Albert King, and there were great country guitarists, Chet Atkins, Merle Travis. But rock and roll was basically still in the garage at that time. And Robbie Robertson, along with people like Mike Bloomfield, who also played with Dylan, and later the British Blues Invasion people, brought that forward into a more musically virtuosic way of playing. So I don't know exactly, but I would describe Robbie Robertson's style, because he was not one of the lead singers in a band that had three great lead singers. His voice really was the guitar. And in an era when lots of musicians, for example, Eric Clapton, who's in the movie, interviewed, were taking extended guitar solos rooted in jazz and blues, Robbie Robertson was very much focused on the songs, which is not surprising since he wrote them. But he employed a way of bending the notes to get kind of an unusual tone and sound in his guitar, and he would lag forward with the, he would go in front of the rhythm and lag behind the rhythm, sort of like Thelonious Monk in jazz.
Or Sinatra and his singing.
Although that's an awkward comparison, because Sinatra was so smooth and Robbie's guitar playing was definitely more rock.
Yeah.
But, there's a scene in the movie in The Last Waltz that's also repeated in Once Were Brothers, where Eric Clapton is the guest and they're doing Further On Up the Road, which was a Bobby Blue Bland blues hit. And Eric's guitar strap breaks, and Robbie just jumps right in and takes over the lead. And the way he's playing, as opposed to Clapton, is striking.
Okay.
Because Clapton is like ripping through the three chord 12 bar changes, and Robbie takes it and starts looping around all over the groove. It's pretty revealing, actually.
Yeah.
I think he's underrated as a guitar player, even though he was, I think, recognized in his back then as probably the best of the guy of the short soloists, the short guys at taking short solos, as opposed to like Dwayne Allman or Eric Clapton.
Yeah, at one point,
the Grateful Dead.
Eric Clapton at one point reveals to the camera that he'd broken up Cream and rushed to America to sit at the foot of Robbie Robertson, and so he's hanging out with him, and he's saying, "So, do you want a jam?" And we record songs and so forth. But he was willing to completely alter the course of his career in service to Robbie Robertson.
Well, he may have been engaging in a bit of hyperbole, but it was still a nice thing. Nice thing to say. Very complimentary.
What's the thrust of the film in to your mind?
Well, the thrust of the film really is that it's about Robbie Robertson. It's based on his memoir that he wrote, which could be seen as a delayed response to Levon Helm's memoir, which came out back in the 1990s, in which Levon was pretty bitter about the way that the band had broken up and about Robbie Robertson. I think some of his claims may be unfounded or at least only partially justified. He felt, according to other people in the movie, he felt that he deserved co-credit on some of the songwriting because he was so influential in the way that the recorded arrangements came out.
Mm.
But that's not necessarily how it works with a songwriting copyright.
Yeah,
it can, but it doesn't have to. It's also significant that on the band's first album, Music from Big Pink, Robbie only wrote about a third of the material on there. Dylan has two tunes, and the other guys. And on the next album, which was just called The Band, it's the one with the brown cover that's got Cripple Creek on it and The Night They Drove Old Dixie Down. Even then, Robbie only wrote about half the material. It wasn't until the album after that, Stage Fright, that he really took over as the band's songwriter.
Hmm.
But he also said it was an advantage to him as a songwriter, knowing that he was not going to be the lead singer.
Yeah.
So he didn't have to stick to his own limitations as a vocalist. He could write with these three different magnificent voices in mind. And the way that they sang harmony, I think, is unique. As Springsteen points out in the movie, among, very specifically says, white rock bands, that they had these harmonies with the three great singers.
Which you hear on The Wait and certain other
right.
other classic moments of
right.
rock beauty. It's a well-done film as far as it goes. It's kind of talking headsy, but nevertheless, I assume...
Well, it's talking headsy, but it's got a lot of great music in
yeah.
it. But I do agree that it was just slightly less than totally fulfilling for me. There's some interesting details. For example, Robbie Robertson was married at a very young age and was raising children while the rest of these guys were out there running around getting drunk and snorting cocaine and in some cases shooting heroin. And he's home with his kids. And that, I think, contributed to the them going in their different directions. And Levon eventually got it together and had a great second chapter in his career based out of Woodstock, New York, but Richard Manuel and Rick Danko didn't make it out of the 20th century. Danko's also somewhat overlooked in this movie.
Mm.
They go into some depth about Richard Manuel
right.
and kind of his troubled nature, but Danko, who's, in my opinion, maybe the best of all three of them as a singer, like that's him on It Makes No Difference Now, singing the lead, he gets kind of ignored. I don't know why. Another key person in here, though, is Dominique Robertson, who was Robbie's wife. She was French-Canadian. They met when the band was on tour in Paris, and she didn't speak much English at that time, you know, but she also is very insightful. It's as,
yes.
They're not still married in the rock and roll way, but, they're obviously still friends, and she's also adds, I think, a lot of insight into the movie, including insight into the other members of the band. She was in the car with Richard Manuel during one of several car wrecks that took place in Woodstock and was nearly killed. And once again, that was maybe part of what led to the split.
Mm. A little resentment on...
Well, yeah, you almost killed my wife. Yeah.
But it's well worth seeing.
Right.
It's a little bit better than a VHS, video, the video, those rock and roll biographies on cable television.
Behind the music.
Behind the music.
Is that what you're thinking of?
Yes.
Right. It's more thoughtful. And obviously Scorsese's involved and Ron Howard. And we were trying to figure out who this director is, Daniel Roher. And
all we could find is that he's Canadian, and I think he's done a few other documentaries.
It
but
just
none,
said he's best known for Once We're Brothers,
yeah, yeah.
which is indubitably true.
On right. Getting known for something, yeah.
Well, should we listen to a few minutes of?
I just want to say one more thing. I saw The Last Waltz as part of the Real Music series. It was on, I think, on a Saturday or Sunday afternoon. And I hadn't seen it probably in close to 40 years, and the music was better, with the exception of Neil Diamond, who didn't know exactly what he was doing there. But the rest of them, it was better than what I remembered. Mm. And people in the theater were applauding just as if they were at a live performance after some of the takes. And this is an excellent companion piece for The Last Waltz, but it is not about the whole band. It's about Robbie Robertson primarily, and there is two sides to this story, including Levon's side as well. And if you're interested, you could read his memoir as well.
Yeah,
I believe I don't recall the title off the top of my head, but I think there is a documentary also about Levon Helm from, I'm going to say, somewhere between 5 and 10 years ago.
Right.
So I'm sure that.
Yeah, he set up shop in Woodstock and would have these great jam sessions, and he made two great albums in the early 2000s, Dirt Farmer and I think Electric Dirt or something like that. So, we've got queued up here the theme song from Once We're Brothers.
Let's take a listen. Okay, yes, that's Once We're Brothers. Who's the lead singer on which one of them is?
Robbie.
Robbie. Robbie, yes, okay.
And you can tell why he, didn't sing lead. but he sang harmonies, but again, he wrote the tunes, and he wrote them with Levon and Richard and Rick in mind.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah. Now this is DK Home. This is Film at 11, middle of the show. We've just been listening to Rick Mitchell talk about the band and the new documentary, Once We're Brothers. And now we're moving on to the Portland International Film Festival, or PIFF, and it's in its 43rd manifestation?
It's 43rd iteration. Yes.
So, Mark, tell us, you've just interviewed the new director of the Film Studies Center, and this is her first festival. So there's quite a few differences between this iteration and its 42 predecessors.
Yeah, there definitely are some changes. And I was able to talk to Amy Dotson, who's the new director of the Film Center, who was hired after Bill Foster had that job for 40 years. he retired in 2008, so last year's festival there was an interim crew of directors. But this is Amy's first year on the job. And as you might be led to, as you might expect, things are not completely the same, but in some ways they are. I mean, this is still an amazing opportunity to dive into a really diverse array of international cinema. It's also an opportunity to explore regional cinema. Probably from a filmgoer's perspective, maybe the biggest change is that they've folded what was the Northwest Filmmakers Festival into the Portland International Film Festival. So you'll see films in the program that are from Lesotho and Laos and Italy and China, and then you'll see a fair number that are from Oregon and Washington and British Columbia. So that's an interesting juxtaposition, I thought, and I think it'd be interesting to see how that works.
They've added these, condensed these two into one, and yet the festival's shorter.
Yes, yeah. And in previous years, it typically had been sort of three weekends and the weeks between them, so it would be 17 days or something like that. This year, it's two weekends and the week between. So it's from March 6th, today is the opening night, and it runs through next Sunday, the 15th. Is that right? Am I doing my math right? Anyway, yeah, that is correct. And it's got about over 100 films still. I'm not sure. I'm never sure if that number includes all the shorts in the programs or not, but anyway, it's over 100 movies. I had a chance to check out a few of them. So I guess another thing I should say, again, just from a pure filmgoer's perspective, previous years would often, there would be an opportunity to sort of sample a lot of the art house movies that would be coming out down the pike in the ensuing months from distributors like, you know, Miramax or Sony Pictures Classics or whatever. So that was often one purpose of the festival, was to give you like a head start on those. A lot less of that here, which I don't think is a bad thing necessarily. But some films that you will see again soon on Portland screens, the most notably Kelly Reichardt's new movie, First Cow, which I know is opening at Cinema 21 on the 20th, so the very next weekend after the festival.
And she will be a guest on our show on that very day.
Oh, excellent.
Discussing the film.
That will be fascinating. Yeah. I very much look forward to hearing that.
Yeah.
And then another one is Armando Iannucci, the British director of creator of HBO's Veep and The Thick of It on television, acerbic comic works. He has a new version he has done of The Personal History of David Copperfield, which I have not seen. I have looked
not
at the trailer.
Not the magician,
not
the but
not that I know
Charles
of.
Dickens
yes.
character.
But yeah, some very interesting casting, and certainly, as you might expect, a more modern kind of snarky sensibility to it. I'll talk about a few other films that I managed to see. There's a couple of Oregon-made ones I want to mention, but just so people have a sense as well, there are a lot of sort of the theme of the festival seems to be cinema unbound, and it's this notion of sort of taking movies outside the movie theater and expanding the definition of what cinema is. And that includes some sort of off-the-wall events. One that we were talking about before the show is a listening party for the six-hour podcast series called Anthem Homunculus, which was created by John Cameron Mitchell, the creator of Hedwig and the Angry Inch, and who has been on the show Shrill, which films in Portland. He's been around town a lot the last few months. So he will be there to supervise or introduce, or I'm not sure what, a live listening party of this very cinematic, you know, lots of huge cast, lots of sound effects, dozens of songs. It'll be interesting to see what that's like. It's cinema with no visual component, except what you imagine in your head.
Yes.
There's other things. There's some experimental animation accompanying electronic music performances. There's some exterior large-scale projections on the side of the art museum building.
Virtual reality
opportunities? I'm not sure if there's technically a virtual reality component, but I know that's something that they certainly are exploring at the Film Center. I do want to mention a couple of films that I was able to see. Oh, they're also actually showing Onward, the new Pixar movie, which is perhaps the most like incongruous title in the whole thing. But there's a free screening of that tomorrow at noon. Two world premieres that are happening, both shot in Oregon. One is called Clementine, directed by Lara Jean Gallagher, and it's about both of these films, interestingly enough, are about female friendship. This one is about a young woman who is fleeing a breakup. Her boyfriend, she heads to the former partner's lakeside cabin, breaks in, wants to stay there and sort of reassess her situation. But she gets there and she finds another young woman, a teenager, who has sort of broken into the boathouse and is living there. So they form this interesting kind of symbiotic, not entirely healthy relationship. They each have secrets that eventually, of course, come to the fore. I thought that, you know, this was a really good feature directing debut. The performances were a little shaky, but other than that, I really liked the mood of it, and I think it's definitely a director to watch. But even more impressive, I have to say, was a film called Sophie Jones, which is directed by... I'm looking for the name right now. It was shot in Portland. Ask me a question.
Well, I just want to also remind the listeners that Mark's interview with the director of the Film Study Center is online at Oregon Arts Watch, and on the show page for this episode, I'll put a link to that article.
Thank you for mentioning that. Yes. That is orartswatch.org.
Okay.
So, yeah, this movie, Sophie Jones, I was very impressed by. It's directed by Jesse Barr and was co-written by her and her cousin, who is named Jessica. So it's Jesse and Jessica Barr, which is a little confusing. But Jessica is a Portland State University student, Portland native, and gives a very impressive naturalistic performance in this story about a teenager, high school senior, I think, whose mother had died a year previously. She and the rest of her family are still coping with this. She, you know, sort of engages in some acting out behavior, some reckless behavior, you know, grief-motivated activity, but it all feels very real. Both her, the actress who plays her sister, and her dad are really good. And she just, the photography has this real warmth to it. The whole thing just felt real in a way that movies about teenagers almost never do, I think. And maybe that comes from having her co-write the screenplay and the fact that she's working with a family member, and that level of comfort probably helped.
Remember Mumblecore?
Yeah, but this is you could compare it to that a little, but it's more polished. And when I say, you know, when I say naturalistic, I don't mean mumbly or like sloppy at all. Mm-hmm. It's still very controlled. It looks great, a lot better than a lot of those mumblecore movies did. So anyway, yeah, Jesse Barr again. First film. It's executive produced by Nicole Holofcener, the veteran indie film and TV director, and that makes sense. It's very much of a piece with her sort of métier. But yeah, that one is screening on March 13th and 14th, next Friday and Saturday. So among the many, many things worth checking out.
So I have a question.
Would spotlight that.
There's one movie in this festival that I've seen, Purple Rain.
Yes.
What's it doing there?
Yeah.
Well, they have a guest curator who is showing it for reasons that I'm not entirely sure of. So, yeah, I don't know. But, yeah, that is they're showing Purple Rain tomorrow night at the Witzel. And why not, I suppose, you know? It's always worth
seeing. It's cinema unbound.
It's cinema unbound in time, in space, in everything, yes.
So, again, this is Mark Mohan talking about the 43rd Portland International Film Festival, PIFF. Big changes. And his interview with the director, whose name is
Amy Dotson,
is online at Oregon Arts Watch.
Yeah. And I'll try to make it to some of these events. Yes. Maybe I'll pop by next week and give a little
good idea.
Up.
And also, thank you, Rick Mitchell, for once again bringing your expertise in the world of music to bear on the art of cinema and helping being a friend of the show.
Thank you.
Rick, of course, was talking about Once We're Brothers, the new documentary, basically about Robbie Robertson, but about the band. And next week we'll be here. It'll be March 13th, Friday the 13th. Fortunato of the Monday Sampler will be the guest, and we'll be discussing some unlucky things. We don't know yet. Anyway, we'll see. I hope to hear you then. And keep watching the screens. Even if...
KBU at the Clinton is a monthly film series that benefits your community radio station. This month's screening is Honeyland on Thursday, March 12th from 7 to 9 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater. Honeyland chronicles a Macedonian woman's journey in strife while cultivating honey using ancient beekeeping traditions. Again, that's Honeyland on Thursday, March 12th from 7 to 9 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kbu.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This is KBOO Portland. It's 11 a.m. And coming up is Pacific Underground, the show by, for, and about the Asian and Pacific Islander communities in and around Portland. I get to tell you that KBOO programming is made possible by KBOO member listeners and support from Afru Gallery, presenting the Ides of March, a pop-up on Sunday, March 15th, featuring local artists and authors, including Weird War, the Zymoglyphic Museum, local artists Hello Kitska, Happy Fangs, and Hesher Park, and artist and author Stephen Leba, reading from his new memoir, We Are All Indians Now. More information available online at afrugallery.com.
You're listening to Pacific Underground on KBOO Community Radio. Our show is on hiatus until May, and so we are doing a rerun. Until then, we are looking for new members to join the collective. Pacific Underground is the only show by and for Asians and Pacific Islanders in the Pacific Northwest.